It's showtime.
Okay, Tokyo,
South America,
Australia,
France,
Germany,
UK,
Africa.
Here we go. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bycod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. Let's get this party started for the 12th day of September 2019. This is the Horn. HeadOn.live is where you find us on the interweb tubes. HeadOn.live, that's where you go to find all your podcasting needs. Practically every platform that we're aware of is listed there, thanks to Brother Deacon Asa. And it's also where you go if you want to be part of the merry, madcap, wacky, zany, real-time multimedia extravaganza that is the Horn chat room during the 3 hours in which this program is live. 6 to 9 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time and 3 to 6 p.m. Pacific Daylight Time and wherever you might be on the planet, whatever your local time is. Hopefully we can sort that out based on location. Yeah. Hi, I'm Bob Kincaid. It's Thorn in the Side Thursday. And if you jump in and pick out a screen name and a password, you'll be greeted by Anatole and Jimmy and Squeaky and capably moderated by longtime inveterate, indefatigable veteran chat room moderator Sparky, who, being a third stage guild navigator, is knocking the rust off and folding space, and you'll recognize him in the room as Man Cave. Yes. And let's see. Every program here begins with gratitude. Many thanks indeed this evening going out to our 12th day of the month subscribers. That's thanks to Paul, and thanks to Suman, and thanks to Mark, and thanks to Gary up in the greater New York City area. Thank you, Paul, Suman, Mark, and Gary, for being partial sponsors of the program and making it possible for us to knock out about a week's worth of funding needs here so that we can have fundraising-free radio at the end of in the last week of every month, if everything works out properly. We're still behind. The fundraising goal for this evening is $395. $395, and that means that would be last night $195 worth of last night and $200 this evening, and then of course $200 to finish tomorrow. And we're on our way to, if everything works out as planned. Let's see here. If everything works out as planned, then we'll start fundraising free radio on the 24th of September. And I sure hope we're gonna. Okay? So that's where we stand. $395 fundraising. If you want to help out, run over to HeadOn.live, click the contribute tab, and it's as easy as can be to support independent progressive broadcasting, which is what this is and has been for a whole lot of years now. We're still here, hanging on from month to month and hanging on by a thumb, you know, the last frayed thread of a dry-rotted sneaker lace, but we're here. And by we, I don't mean me and that mouse in my pocket. I mean the whole community, because this is a platform for conversation. And I hope we need more people to take advantage of the opportunity to get in and be part of the discussion. I'd like that a lot. I was stunned by those numbers that we sorted out, that for every one person who kicks in to keep the program going, there are 100 who don't. And there are some who can't, and that's okay. But when we talk about subscriptions, well, starting tomorrow, Ralph's is going to be sponsoring a subscription doubling contribution. She'll double the subscription of up to five people. Five brand new $10 a month subscribers get their subscriptions doubled. It's a chance to double your money, you know, 5, 10, 10, 20, up to 50 bucks. So thanks to Ralph's for that, and that'll go from the 13th to the 20th, and we'll hopefully scrape up five brand new subscribers. So that's where that stands. And thank you very kindly, Brother Deacon Asa, letting me know hot on both streams. Thorny streams. Greetings and blessings to you and yours, Brother Kincaid, says Alexander. Thank you very kindly. Thank you so very much. Let's see. A little note here. Subject line, every damn day. A couple of headlines from Ron and Raleigh. Yesterday, the Republican Party here in North Carolina proved just what a scurrilous bunch of lying swine they are. And they are that. After announcing that because of the 9/11 memorials, there would be no votes in the early morning session, these shitheels held a vote to overturn the governor's veto of their budget with less than half the legislature present. Afterwards, they stood before the press and swore they hadn't said there wasn't going to be any votes taken. These people are liars and hypocrites, yet they seated another congressman, Dan Bishop, in the 9th Congressional District. That guy makes Trump look moderate. On the world stage, Bibi did another land grab by annexing a huge chunk of the West Bank against international law. This is not just the Republicans. The Democratic Party is just as complicit in these thefts of Palestinian lands. It's true. Nowhere in the world a mumbling word is uttered. No talk of sanctions or anything else. Meanwhile, Jared has handed over responsibility for working on a Middle East peace plan to Alan Berkowitz, whom Hope Hicks said his main job was arranging meetings and getting coffee. Certainly tells you the gravity that they attach to the human rights disaster that continues to unfold every day in the occupied territories. The Palestinians can forget about a two-state solution. The offer from Israel is eat shit and like it. It just keeps getting worse. There's no light at the end of the tunnel. Hell, there isn't even a tunnel. Yeah, is it one of those Wile E. Coyote things, Ron? You know, the tunnel painted on rock and it's just with the coyote? Yeah. Oh, hey, Steve from Georgistan, pinch hit midweek chat room utility moderator and all-around great guy, has wandered into the room. Hey, hey, Steve. Welcome, welcome. Yeah, and that brings to mind something. I happened to keep the TV going past the closing hours of my filthy little habit yesterday, and MSNBC is busting ass to try to promote a book by Barry Weiss. Now, Barry Weiss is a horrible human being. She's a classic case of failing upward into the echelons of the editorial staff of the editorial page at the New York Times, and she's written a book called How to Beat Anti-Semitism or something like that. And, well, good. God knows we're up to our eyeballs in Nazis in America. And figuring out how to beat anti-Semitism is a big deal. But it turns out that as she engaged in discussion, it wasn't really so much anti-Semitism she was into because she equated, no kidding, she did. She equated the real live, no kidding, goose-stepping Nazis who support Donald Trump. She equated Steve King of Iowa and that ilk who are, you know, who's, what's wrong with white nationalism? She equated them with people who support BDS. She said they're the same kind of engaged in the same sort of anti-Semitism. She put forward that same sleazy, tawdry, tired, old, craptastic false equivalence that says that criticizing the far-right, ultra-right-wing, downright fascist government of Israel is the same thing as being an anti-Semite when it very clearly is not. Okay? Now, the Nazis who support Trump hate Jews, hate Israel, hate everything. But there are tons of people who are not anti-Semitic who would actually like to see Israel stop being a pariah state. who would like to see it be able to be counted among the decent nations of the earth instead of a country that is engaged in a level of oppression and bigotry that puts the apartheid regime of South Africa to shame. And so, well, I know Bear's not, she's not listening or nothing, but for the sake of, just for the sake of clarity. Hi, Clarity. In an effort to be clear about the difference between real anti-Semitism and the butthurt of people who can't stand to see Israel criticized, who can't, frankly, can't defend the indefensible, let me share with you a moment here from Rick Wiles. Now, he's a hardcore Trump supporter. He's a big maggot, but he found out, apparently, that there's good money to be had working the anti-Semitic side of the street. So, Barry, if you were listening, maybe you might want to hear this guy and understand that this isn't anything even remotely like simply calling for economic pressure to be put on Israel so that they'll stop shitting all over the Palestinian people. Check out Rick Wiles.
Promote some kind of fake Israel. It's what's out there now is fake. It's a fake Israel.
Counterfeit.
It is a counterfeit. They don't even speak real Hebrew. It's a fake Hebrew. That's the truth. If you think I'm making it up, you go read and find out. It's a reconstructed language. Why? Because nobody spoke Hebrew for thousands of years. They didn't even know what it sounded like. So when the Zionists took over in 1948, they made up a language and called it Hebrew.
Time out. We all know how I feel about organized religion. I also support anybody's right to participate in it. But I'm pretty sure that cantors in synagogues have been reading and singing Hebrew for a couple of thousand years. That's part of the whole, just like there's ancient Greek and Koine Greek and modern day Greek, so too are there versions of language. I mean, for him to say that the Hebrew spoken by Israelis is fake Hebrew is to say that the English spoken by an American citizen in the waning years of the second decade of the 21st century is fake English because it lacks the these, the thous, the thines, and the whatnots of Elizabethan English. And maybe Elizabethan English was fake English, too. You know, fake English because it wasn't all one not a prilly with the sure suit of the truth of marches perched to the ruta. Chaucerian Middle English. No, fuck that. That was fake English, too, because it wasn't that stuff that was being spoke by the Angles on the Jutland Peninsula. God damn. But that's what anti-Semitism sounds like. Not, everybody who ever brings Barry Weiss an insufficiently cold iced coffee, that doesn't make them an anti-Semite.
And it's funny to hear all these Christian Zionists say, I speak Hebrew. How do you know you're speaking Hebrew? You're just making up words. It's a fake language spoken by fake Jews in a fake Israel.
Yes.
The whole...
Whoa. Fake Jews? I guess Rick Wiles is one of the real ones? Running around with one of those, my boss is a Hebrew carpenter bumper stickers on his Lamborghini or what, because he drives something nice. Jesus. And in fact, many of these people are Israelis, notes Steve. Adding, I've said this before and I will say it again. Why is it that Christians always feel it incumbent upon themselves to comment on what's really Jewish? I know. Kyle asks, how the fuck is supporting a movement to end financial support for a state that's committing literal genocide against Palestinians the same as supporting people who say what's wrong with white supremacy and support people who say Jews will not replace us? What the fuck, goddamn, I hate these people. You know, it's pretty damned annoying. Yeah, Brother Deacon Asa says, it's all... wrong day for Rick Wiles, Bob. It's all a big lie, Bob. Herzl was a Muslim. Herzl was a Muslim. Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's got bumper sticker potential. Jesus, Bob, don't even whisper that into the ear of the universe. The damn bumper sticker will be for sale over on Stormfront before you know what happened.
Well, things fake. Who faked it? Satan, the imitator.
Right.
Because he wants Christians to transfer their identity as Israel, the chosen people of God, and transfer that identity to people who deny Jesus Christ.
Yes.
I think it probably sounded better in the original German. Or at least more authentic. Better is probably the wrong word. Better is the wrong word. But that's just sort of a by the way, because it's not actually where I wanted the program to begin. Where I wanted the program to begin this evening was with a little lead up to tonight's pageant. I'm sure that I don't listen to a lot of other progressive radio because I always want to make sure that this program is its own thing. And sometimes when you spend too, you can get some leakage. And so I'm guessing that all day long there's been oodles of talk about the upcoming pageant. And probably some of the people talking about the upcoming pageant have talked about it in a way as if to indicate that it actually means something. Nothing could be further from the truth. Once again, a reminder, ain't nobody gonna vote in no primary for, let's see, 4.5 more months. And so this is a reminder, this is a capitalist exercise in revenue transfer and revenue generation. Oh, let me go back here to Kyle for a second. Ha 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 ha. The irony of a guy who literally uses words that his savior never said, fake words, to justify his beliefs, calling a language spoken by those of another religion fake, is enough to make me faint. Well, just make sure you get a soft place to land there, Kyle. Uh-oh, Steve went there. Maybe what the fake Jews are speaking is Reformed Egyptian. No, that's what the fake prophet Joseph Smith was reading through his rocks in his hat. Damn nation. But I get your point, Steve. I do. And Monique adds, so this moron thinks he's speaking English? Oh, forget it. Just dumb, dumb, dumb. My God, and they reproduce. All these morons do is fake and false. I can't wait until their kids crash their cars and the teenagers say, no, fake news, I didn't crash y'all car, Mom and Dad, while the premiums go up. But back to the issue at hand, the pageant. It's been narrowed down to 10, so that's what? That's Bernie and Biden and Elizabeth Warren and Kamala and Booker and Buttigieg, and Julian Castro, and Andrew Yang, and Amy Klobuchar. That's 10. And that's probably about six more than there need to be. But, and it's going to be 3 hours. Jesus Christ. I mean, is there going to be an intermission with animated boxes of popcorn and animated cups of soda pop? Let's all go to the lobby. 3 hours? Starts at 8 Eastern, 5 Pacific. I'd kind of like to watch some of it. For the entertainment value, mind you. Not for any real political worth, because there's next to no political worth in it. I say again, this is an exercise in money-making. And I can kind of prove it. No, there's no kind of about it. I can prove it. Rather easily, as a matter of fact. It's been narrowed down to 10 regarding that. Brother Deacon Asa says, you sure? Haven't they deported Andrew Yang back to Chinese Taipei yet? Oh, Jesus. Don't remind us of Jesse Lee last night. Just, ouch. Now I've got his speech impediment running through my head. In regard to Barry Weiss, Flavio writes, as Jonathan Geyer over at the American Prospect aptly pointed out, by arguing that the left represents as dangerous a threat as mass shooters and right-wing terrorists, Times writer Barry Weiss cheapens the crisis facing America, one that she has witnessed firsthand. Her background does not give her license to attempt to explain the origins of the attack without delivering the reader any context or history. Of what value is it that Trump delivered a strong statement about the Tree of Life killings, as Weiss highlights? She doesn't mention Trump's pandering to Second Amendment Republicans or Senator Mitch McConnell's decades of closeness with the gun industry. Where is the discussion of federal law enforcement's failure to stop white supremacists, not to mention the Trump administration's drastic cuts to such programs? These enablers of white supremacy are material to the story. And that's all in reference to the fact, as Flavio points out, that Barry Weiss hails from the community and was actually bat mitzvahed in that very sanctuary, the Tree of Life Synagogue there in Squirrel Hill, part of Greater Pittsburgh. But, yeah, people with morals who want to use economic pressure, not guns or bombs or bullets, to drag Israel into the community of law-abiding nations, yeah, that's just wrong. Meanwhile, Dave, questioning from the blind, says, Bob, who the fuck is this Rick Wiles? The same one with the porpoise-driven life? No. That's the different Rick, the porpoise-driven life. My apologies to all dolphins, says Dave, but not to the dolphin fans who follow this shitbag. Is he one of these Nazi types who use Hebrew characters when they march up and down the street, and who the hell says he's a Christian? I've always heard it said that Christians are followers of Christ, you know, Jesus, the Nazarene preacher. Most all Israelis now speak Aramaic. There's only one town in Israel where that language is still spoken, and it's predominantly a Muslim town. Interesting. Signed, your buddy Dave, questioning from the blind. Jim, I don't know. Jim says, volume, please. Thanks. I don't... what? Everything is... everything looks pretty hunky-dory on our stream. Maybe turn up your volume a little bit, buddy. Because if I go any louder, I'm going to start clipping. And then the emails come in about the clipping, and that sucks, too. Yeah, I sympathize with Monique. Monique says, it's too early for this shit. Yeah, meaning the pageants. Yeah, thank you. Brother Deacon Asus's levels seem to be okay. They're looking good on this end. I did some tweaking, and I think the levels are actually better than they've been in a long time. I've had a couple of people say that. So, no, back to the pageants, because this matters. Thank you, Sparky. Sound is golden here, Bob. Appreciate it. Like I said, I can prove that this is this has nothing to do with politics or actual civic engagement or no. I want to go backwards just a hair to last weekend, to something that happened. Ah, thank you, Darlene in Connecticut, saying you sound good to me. Thank you, I appreciate that. And that's technical, not aesthetic, I think. This week with George Snuffleupagus, Sunday last. They had on the book, whoever books these people, booked Chris Christie and Rahm Emanuel. Now, a lot of people remember Rahm Emanuel as, I guess, what, Obama's chief of staff, the disastrous mayor of Chicago. But whenever I hear Rahm Emanuel's name, I think about even before Obama got in office, when Rahm Emanuel's dad said, described his son's job in the upcoming in the Obama White House, saying, "It's not like he's some Arab scrubbing the floors." That's what I remember. Sorry. Memories like that. But they brought Chris Christie and Rahm Emanuel in, not to talk about Palestine or anything like that. Rahm Emanuel is such a right-wing Democrat that he's probably one splinter off a platform plank away from being just a Republican. You might recall it was Rahm Emanuel who referred to a progressive candidate for Senate in Arkansas and the people who supported him as being, and we've talked about this word this week, so this is fitting as well, retarded. That's another thing that's just stored on an otherwise bored neuron in my memory somewhere. So there's Rahm Emanuel on This Week with George Snuffleupagus. And of course, now that he's not mayor of Chicago anymore, he's got his. It's an igamfoo situation. I got mine few. And he works for Centerview Partners as an investment banker. And the panel discussion, which curiously didn't really have anybody on it to support Medicare for all, it was all a big hate on Medicare for all fest, and it was nasty, and it was underhanded, and it was dishonest.
We've taken a position so far, and the candidates have, through the process, a few have not, about on basically Medicare for All, which is we're going to eliminate 150 million people's health care, and we're going to provide health care for people that just come over the border. That is an untenable position for the general election.
It's also not true. We're not going to, Medicare for All is not going to take health care away from anybody. It's going to provide health care to everybody. That's the all part of Medicare for, wait for it, all, as in everyone, as in, you know, even like me, who remains, you know, terrifyingly uninsured. Lee in New York says, "I remember when Obama said that when he lost part of a finger, I remember when Obama said that when he lost part of a finger, becoming effectively mute." I think I know what Lee's saying. I think I'm saying it wrong or not comprehending it right, but yeah. And so there's Rahm Emanuel putting forward that stupid, painfully ignorant trope that all them goddamn liberal progressive commie pinko leftist Democrats want to do is, well, they want to take health care away from good, God-fearing, real Americans and give it to them foreigners. Flavio reminding us that Rahm Emanuel closed 50 public schools in Chicago. He and Arne Duncan were big friends of for-profit charter schools. Yeah, that... I'm not a fan. But I do ask the question, would it be okay? And I'm guessing the answer with Rahm is no, it's not okay. Would it be okay, for instance, if we started vaccinating the children that we're kidnapping and keeping in cages so as to keep down the likelihood of epidemics of infectious diseases breaking out, like the current one involving an outbreak of mumps that has spread to like 900 people. By the way, this wasn't a child, that's not a hell of a lot of at least to it, but another one of the human beings that we have in our concentration camps has died. This being an adult male. Dead. In our custody. Because who cares? I mean, I care. You care. This community cares. This outraged. But what does Rahm Emanuel care? Rahm Emanuel's got his. So there's the lie. Take away health care and give it to the illegals. Like I said, he's one splinter on a platform away from just being a Republican.
As you know, George, I just biked around Lake Michigan, nearly 1,000 miles, through Michigan and Wisconsin, two really important states. Nobody at a diner ran at me and said, take my health care away.
Because he biked around Michigan and Wisconsin. I can't imagine Rahm Emanuel, A, stopping in a diner. I can't imagine, B, anybody particularly wanting to talk to Rahm Emanuel. And if we mean, do we mean pedaled or rode his Harley, biked? And see, two can play at that game. Because to the extent that nobody ran up to him and said, take my health care away, I wonder how many people ran up to him and said, hey, Rahm, every day I go to sleep and I say a little prayer. I say, dear fake baby Jesus, please, please, please take care of those gazillionaires who are CEOs and COOs and CFOs and COWs of the health insurance industry. Fake baby Jesus, I am so worried that they may not, that come the end of the year, or maybe if a Democrat becomes president, I'm scared, fake baby Jesus. I'm scared, I tell you. I'm worried that they won't be able to buy their 14th vacation home or that 157-foot motor yacht. Rahm, I'm worried. Them poor fellers. Golly Moses. The thought of having to only... Because they're different from us. I mean, they can't live on less than a few bajillion dollars. Us little people, we can scrape and scrounge and get by and do as best we can. But them bajillionaires, they're entitled to the lifestyle to which they have become accustomed, and they have a right to hold America hostage. you know, between people like Meghan McCain going to hold and the gun owners going to hold America hostage to keep their AR-15s, and the healthcare CEOs holding America hostage, somebody's going to have to let somebody go first. James in Illinois says, but Bob, what about that wonderful employer-provided health care that I used to lose every time we had a recession? Never mind. Sorry I brought it up. I understand, James. And that's the other thing nobody walked up while he was biking. That's nearly 1,000 miles. It's like saying Mike Pompeo graduated first in his class at West Point. Henceforward, whenever we mentioned Rahm Emanuel, we're going to have to say, you know, he biked 1,000 miles around Lake Michigan, and that's no little doings. But nobody walked up to Rahm Emanuel and said, golly, Rahm, I sure do love me some for-profit insurance. I just love it that there are executives out there in the 1% who make profits off of the agony and the misery and the illness and the sickness and the suffering and the death of us little Americans. I tell you what, I love that shit, Rahm. Of course, along the way, Richard Trumka over at the AFL-CIO wasn't much help. He said that the Democratic presidential candidates are going to have to take into account the health care that labor has. Well, Medicare for All does take that into account, because labor is a part of all. And the funny thing is, I've talked to a few people who have had health care through their labor organizations, and I have yet to find any who get all weepy about it. And for good reason. The out-of-pocket, you know, it's not like labor-provided health care has no out-of-pocket expenses. And that's ultimately what we're headed toward, is the idea embodied in Medicare for All that there should be no out-of-pocket expenses. That while you're laid up and trying to recover from whatever made you have to access our profit-driven healthcare system, that you're not sitting there stressing yourself out and keeping yourself from being able to heal because you're sitting there worried about the $400,000 or $500,000 you owe for trying to fucking survive. As Brother Deacon Asa points out, what part of Medicare for All does Rahm Emanuel not understand? Has he got an intellectual disability? Wink, wink, wink. Yeah. Work with me here. Just a little bit more.
Nobody. This is reckless as it relates to, and you don't have to take the position to win the primary, and you're basically literally hindering yourself for the general election.
Yeah, because it's a hindrance for the general election to say, hey, everybody in the United States should be able to go to the doctor when they're sick. Explain to me how that's a hindrance. I mean, sure, the maggots aren't that bright, and the maggots will do whatever their maggot overlord tells them to do. But that's maybe somewhere around 33% of the population. The other 70%, you got to think are not. If the idea of everybody being able to go to the doctor when they're sick and not being crushed by medical debt is some sort of horror, I mean, what the fuck is wrong with those people? And in point of fact, I think the numbers on Medicare for All, aren't they 50% or better? But Chris Christie and Rahm Emanuel being brought on for nothing but the single purpose of trashing Medicare for All is transparently wicked and transparently dishonest. How do we know? Because they didn't dare have anyone on to defend it. And the third person in that little troika, Chris Christie, Rahm Emanuel, and from over at that bastion of white supremacy, the National Review, Rich Lowry. Now, this is the guy, you recall, who once wrote that when Caribou Barbie, Mussolini, Godzilla from Wasilla, Sarah Palin, that in that one speech back in 2008 where she winked, he wrote how he and ever so many other American men, what's the term, got a tingle down their pants or something. And felt like she, and he actually wrote that he felt like she was winking directly at him. Yeah. It's disgusting. I guess there wasn't a single solitary soul. Nobody from Nurses United, no presidential, no Democratic presidential candidate, nobody that this week with George Snuffleupagus could find to come on, or maybe they didn't want that in the first place. Subject line, wealth care. Flavio writes, I was once on the top floor of the Humana building in downtown Louisville, Kentucky, penthouse suite. I worked for Humana for 5 years in Madison, Wisconsin. The Ohio River below looks like a little piece of string seen from the window. Tons of Italian marble fountains, precious art and paintings. They call it the Pink Palace. Wealth care in action, says Flavio. Indeed. Ron in Raleigh says, well, hell, you know how people love deductibles and copays and having insurance companies deny treatment. I heard Rahm spew that bullshit, and I had to eat dirt and run rabbits. I know. Pity poor me. I've been hanging on to this for 4 days. But I had sometimes I have those little feelings that it's going to come in handy. I could have trotted this out as a classic case of Moran Monday. It certainly represents titanic intellect on the part of the Bookers and George Snuffleupagus and Rahm and Chris and Rich Sparkle Pants Lowry. So it would have worked Tuesday. Yeah, it's a little tough to make it work yesterday, but I knew that today was, you know, this is pageant day. And so I had a feeling it might come in handy, and lo and behold, it has. Brother Deacon Asa points out, labor-provided health care equals having to depend on a shitbag like Joe Manchin to save dying UMWA workers. Yeah, and guess who's going to wind up paying for it? I mean, it's still going to be UMWA healthcare and UMWA black lung. We the people. But they get to sit off to one side and say, no, this is our healthcare that's being paid for by the people of the United States. Other Americans don't deserve what we get. And that's called divide and conquer. And apparently it works. So that's the beginning of the proof that this whole thing this evening is a dodge. Now let's look at a second aspect of it. Flavio called it wealth care. And that is in fact true. Because you see, we know something statistically, and it's pretty much unassailable. And that's this. The more access to wealth you have, the longer you're likely to live. I saw this in an article over at Salon by Keith Spencer. And what he discusses is a new report from the Government Accountability Office. It was commissioned in 2016 by Bernie. And the question it asks is, how does income correlate with life expectancy? I pay attention to these things because of where I live. You know, a male in McDowell County, West Virginia, has the same life expectancy of a male in Haiti, rural Haiti. A man in Guatemala has a slightly longer life expectancy than a male in McDowell County, West Virginia. So here's how that broke out. Among the richest 20% of Americans, and this goes back to stuff that was surveys from like 1992. So they surveyed people aged 51 to 62 in 1992. Let's see, 02, 12, it's 20. No, it's just 27 years ago. So that's, so in 2019, that's people 78 to 89 now. The richest 20% of that survey group, 74% of those people who are up to 89 years old are still alive. I'm sorry, 2014. It went from 92 to 2014. 22 years. So 73 to 85. But then you see the drop-off. In the 60 to 80th percentiles of income in the United States, you drop from 74 to 69%. From the 40th to the 60th percentile of wealth, it drops another 6 percentage points to 63%. In the 20th to the 40th percentile of income, that number is 58%. And then the bottom 20% of Americans who are between 73 and 85, who were 51 to 62 in 1992, only slightly more than half of them were still alive by 2014. So the poorer you are, the sooner you die. And a lot of that has to do with the ability to access health care. Not just have it sort of ethereally available, sort of, kind of, but to really participate in it and in your own well-being. In the same GAO report is the quote, income inequality in the United States was relatively stable from the 1940s to the 1970s. After the 1970s, in other words, with the advent of Ronald Reagan, January 20th, 1981, wage growth at the top of the income distribution outpaced the rest of the distribution, and inequality went up. By 2013, those families in the top 10% of the wealth distribution held 76% of the wealth. That's called income inequality. And then, of course, home ownership dropped in the poorest quintile 9 percentage points between the short span of 2007 to 2016. Hello, Great Recession. So in short, the only way to increase that life expectancy is to use some of our vast wealth that is presently concentrated in the hands of extremely wealthy people whose only real goal is to pass it along to their heirs and assigns forever at law. So that those other percentiles, and especially that last 20th percentile, it can maybe get upwards from, say, 52% and, oh, I don't know, cross the... Gosh, why couldn't we aim for 65%? Why can't we aim for the same 74% that the richest people in America have? What is it about their lives that's so much more valuable than that of a person who has spent their lives busting their ass and would simply like to see another sunrise? Who would like to find out what it is to get old instead of get dead? So those are the facts in that regard. The poorer you are, the sooner you die. This, of course, does not matter a tinker's damn to people like Rich Lowry, Chris Christie, Rahm Emanuel, and George Snuffleupagus, because igamfoo. I got mine. Fuck you. And now this. Now this. Tonight, if you happen to go over to ABC and watch the pageant, well, let's remember, ABC isn't doing this as a public service. ABC is doing this as a way to make money, as a way to get advertisers to give them vast amounts of money in exchange for ABC delivering you into the tender mercies of the advertisers. I don't know what all other ads you'll see, but I know that you're going to be peppered tonight with ads from an outfit that sounds, you know, gosh, it sounds so nice, so benign, so lovely. The Partnership for America's Healthcare Future. Pah. Well, I mean, it's a partnership. I mean, you want to be partnered up with people. You know, there's nothing in there about having a good healthcare future, is there? It should probably be called the Partnership for America's Healthcare Future Profits. That's one, which I think is Klingon. They've been around since 2018, the POC. And in conjunction with the ads they're going to run during the pageant tonight, they're also going to run ads on Facebook and Twitter and Snapchat. And they're going to be doing a takeover of the homepage at YouTube after the pageant. Now, that costs some money. But don't worry, they'll write it off on their taxes. So what's the thrust of PAKF? What's their shtick? Well, it's going to be a series of ads. Attacking Medicare for All. They're not just going to attack it in English, and it's not going to be fake English. It's going to be real, comprehensible, Merkin, big AAA, so as we all can understand English. And they're also going to do it in Spanish. Comunismo. Healthcare is comunismo. Socialismo. Bruga, Bruga, Bruga. Aye. They're even proud of it. They're letting everybody know. The Partnership for America's Healthcare Future today announced that it will launch new television and digital advertising around tonight's Democratic presidential pageant, debate. Part of a seven-figure national public education effort. Education, my white little ass. As part of a seven-figure national public propaganda effort, the ads will run on ABC and Univision television stations during tonight's debate coverage, as well as on both networks' digital properties on desktop, mobile, and connected TV. You're not going to be able to escape it if you want to watch the pageant. You're going to have to listen to them slime the idea of every American being able to go to the doctor when they're sick. I wonder what these filthy things are going to sound like. Let's find out. The name of the ad is Same Thing. And the first thing you see is some millennial white bro with his tousled mousy brown hair and his brown jacket and his sleeves rolled up and looking earnestly at the camera. What does he have to say?
We come from different walks of life,
but we agree on one important thing.
We don't want to be forced into a one-size-fits-all government insurance system.
The politicians may call it Medicare for All, Medicare buy-in, or the public option.
But they mean the same thing. Higher taxes or higher premiums, lower quality care.
Lie, lie, lie. They mean the same thing. No more 200-foot yachts for health care insurance executives. That's what they're worried about. Seven figures they've spent. Let's see that. That's your two tens and threes hundreds and fours thousands and that's fives ten thousands. Yeah, they're spending millions. And I guess since they said seven digits, that's up to $9,999,999.99 to try to bullshit America into not wanting every American to be able to go to the doctor when they're sick. Do you see how easy this messaging is? Everybody in America gets to go to the doctor when they're sick. Because PAKF can't say that now. And PAKF doesn't fucking even want it to happen in the first place. There's a lot of people PAKF doesn't want to insure. PAKF loves millennial bro dude here. Because he probably hasn't gone to the doctor since the last time, he went for his little baby wellness vaccines. If his freaking parents let him have those. Jesus, I hate these bastards. The very fact that they've got up to $9,999,999.99 to spend on this mendacious, duplicitous swill. Is exhibit one in why they should not exist. Because everything they're saying here is a goddamn lie. Every person in this ad is someone who up until recently was an out of work actor. And I'll bet you not one of them has fucking health insurance. How's the irony there? But, you know, you're an actor. You want work. Everybody can't get a job doing Shakespeare rep at the Globe. So if you have to look earnestly into the camera and talk about how, God Almighty, you'd rather be a dead capitalist than a live socialist, well, son of a bitch, is the check going to clear? You get my meaning.
In control of our health care?
We can't afford...
Oh, we missed a line. We can't miss a line. So you got white millennial girl carrying groceries in. You got African-American lady in an office building wearing professional clothing. And then you got bro dude, but they all agree on the same thing because they all come from the same walks of life, but ain't none of them want to be a commie and go to the doctor when they're sick.
Care. Politicians and bureaucrats in control of our health care?
We can't...
Yeah, politicians and bureaucrats in control of your health care? You mean the bureaucrats who make Medicare work so damn well? The bureaucrats who make sure the checks go out for Social Security and get it done and have never gone bankrupt? Those... Yeah, because I far more trust our healthcare system to some dickhead who's out there pricing fucking Maybox than I do a politician and a bureaucrat. Yeah, that's who I want. That's who I want looking after my healthcare. Oh, and of course, there's bannering on this stupid goddamned ad. You know, politicians in control, we can't afford.
Care.
We can't afford one-size-fits-all plans.
We need to fix what's broken, not start over.
We need to fix what's broken, not start over. Starting over is fixing what's broken. Because what's broken is so badly broken, it makes Humpty goddamn Dumpty it look like child's play. And please to remember the words of John Fitzgerald Kennedy. Those who make peaceful revolution impossible make violent revolution inevitable. That kind of thinking got him all dead. Fix what's broken. That's another lie. Because see, the guys who are out there pricing yachts and 14th vacation homes on Martha's Vineyard and Maybox, they don't think the system's broken because for them, it isn't. It is working entirely as planned and entirely as designed. Because it's making them rich off the agony and the misery and the suffering and the screaming and the crying and the wailing and the dying of American citizens. But they figure if this is out there in the middle of every break, they can counter whatever it is that people are saying about our disastrous health care system during the pageant. Now, we're an hour into the program. Started out $395 to go in fundraising. We're still at $395. Remember, tomorrow's a drop-dead day. And there's a bill, there's a couple of bills to pay that, you know, have to do with whether or not this program continues. I'll do everything in my power to make sure that bill gets paid. So, I mean, that's not part of this. That's just a reminder because we're an hour in and nothing's really happened. But if I had something to wager with, then again, maybe you wouldn't take the wager because you wouldn't want to lose. I would wager the following. Now, this story's been out there, okay? It's not like the campaigns don't know about this. The dateline on the press release from these dickheads at PACF is today. But the ad buy was made long before, because you don't just walk up and say, hey, let me count out that here's $9,999,999.99. What can you do for me, ABC? No, this shit takes time to plan. This takes time. It took time to shoot the ad. It took time to hire the actors, to write the script, to get the director and all the people who go into producing this kind of stuff. Some of whom might even be union folks. You never know. And so this stuff's been in the works for a while. But they only announce it today. And you got to wonder if ABC would even accept an ad from a group pushing for Medicare for All. They'd probably say, no, that's clearly meant to benefit the candidates who support Medicare for All. We can't do that. That's unethical. Whereas this is just a matter of, fuck, the check cleared. So here's the little wager that isn't a wager. No one on that pageant stage this evening will mention these sickening, dishonest, miserable, rotten propaganda pieces. Bernie won't. Elizabeth Warren won't. Kamala won't. Biden sure won't. Klobuchar sure won't. Julian Castro won't. Andrew Yang will just tell us to head to higher ground. Because when it comes right down to it, you don't fuck with the money. And you don't fuck with ABC's profits. Because this is being done for profit. Just like the healthcare system is run for profit. It's sleazy. It's dirty. It's tawdry. It's disgusting. It's disingenuous. It's dishonest. And it is de rigueur. So in a little less than an hour, this whole thing will kick off in an auditorium at a historically black university. in Houston, in the state that has the highest rate of uninsured citizens in America, and these things, these vicious pieces of propagandistic bullshit will run without comment, without challenge. And it's all done because this is an ad that benefits Republicans. It just, because of our fucked up campaign finance system, nobody has to admit it. But the poor little CEOs are sweating because there's a lot of intelligent, not 1%, not 10%, not 20% Americans who know damn good and well what their game is, and that their game is to make a profit no matter who has to suffer in the making of it. Because all that bullshit about how it's going to cost more and give less, that's a lie. The People's Policy Project published an analysis today. Said the poverty rate could be cut by 20% by Medicare for All. And of course, we've known for a while that Medicare for All could wind up saving us trillions of dollars. But facts don't matter when a CEO's 250-foot yacht is on the line. Hell no. A little bit of real world. James in Illinois writes in, subject line, workers' compensation. Anyone who's ever worked construction knows that once in a while you get hurt on the job. I broke my leg and was out of work for 3 years. It was a bad one. Almost lost it. When this happens, you go on workers' comp, which pays for everything related to your injury. If it's a serious injury, you can pretty much make the case that nearly all of your health issues might be covered, but you have to push them. James reminds us, this doesn't do a damn thing for your dependents. Sure, you can pay COBRA, but no one can seriously hope to pay that on workers' comp. Not if you want to eat, not if you want to pay rent or a mortgage, car payments, and so forth. There are those in the labor movement who are so myopic that they only see things through the eyes of the 50% plus one they need to keep getting reelected. Trumka is one of those guys, living on the upper crust of the labor movement. They're so busy fighting yesterday's fights that they don't see the handwriting on the wall, and they don't feel the rumblings of the historic vision of labor, of one big union, the Wobblies, the IWW. That's where my head is, says James, and that's where I think Bernie's coming from. Could well be. And, you know, they talk about the health care that labor has. American car companies. Let's look at the auto industry. How much of the given sticker price of an American-made automobile is health care? Well, imagine that gets to be cut by that percentage. That means more workers can be hired, more union workers. Jesus, Igum Fu. Insurance companies, Flavio writes, so-called Medicare Advantage privatization of Medicare. I pimped the Humana Gold Plus Medicare replacement, a so-called Medicare Advantage plan. The government was farming out Medicare recipients to the big insurers, Humana, BCBS, Cigna, United, et al. In return for covering the Medicare gaps, deductibles, prescriptions, vision care, etc., they were paid a capitation of 94% of what it would cost to insure a senior in a given zip code. What did they do back in 1993? They pulled out of Chicago, the collar counties in Milwaukee. They weren't making enough money. The result, people had to reapply for their Medicare supplemental insurance with pre-existing conditions. I was horrified I had any part in that. I later learned the government intervened and made them take the seniors back on their supplements. Well, see, that's your government run right there. You can't. That's politicians and bureaucrats, Flavio. Ron and Raleigh, well, hell, do we really want a bunch of poor-ass old people hanging around uglying up the landscape? Since Ron Reagan, the life expectancy for black males has been declining each year, which works out because the wealth disparity between black folks and white people is growing at such a pace that by 2050, black wealth will be approaching zero. Ron continues, what the fuck? What the fuck does one size fits all mean? If you have employer-provided health insurance, not fucking health care, you already have one size fits all health insurance, and as soon as you lose that crappy job, unless you have a mattress full of cash to pay Cobra, you'll have no size fits all insurance. And the idea of employer-provided health care is sketchy anyway, because what it means is that's another way that your boss can control you. They can shit on you, make your life miserable. They can make you contemplate all manner of horrors on your way to work every day. But the one thing they won't make you won't contemplate is quitting. You'll let them do to you whatever they want to because you got to keep that health care. And they know it, and you know it, and you know they know it, and they know you know they know. We're a very knowledgeable country. Alexander says, James in Illinois is telling the gospel truth, Brother Kincaid, and I'm sure that you already know this. Yep. Asa says, the irony of an out-of-work actor who has no access to health care accepting a part in an anti-healthcare TV ad is not lost on me, nor me. You take the work you get because this, after all, is Merca. Makes me just want to cue up the Lee Greenwood and start singing. Now, the one ad you heard there a minute ago, that's what's going to run in the pageant. They got another one that's going to run on digital platforms, and it's called Threat. Lauren Crawford Shaver is the executive director of PHAF. And Lauren Crawford Shaver said, as healthcare continues to take center stage in the national debate, the partnership is committed to ensuring Americans understand the facts about proposed new government health insurance systems like Medicare for All, Medicare buy-in, and the public option. With about 90% of Americans covered, our leaders need to focus on solutions that control costs and build and improve upon what's working, not on one-size-fits-all government-controlled systems that would force Americans to pay more and wait longer for worse care. We're already, some millions of us, waiting for no care. And no care is what Lauren Crawford Shaver has for us. I don't know why you people won't just go somewhere and die. You're bumming me out. You're harshing my mellow. I'm the executive director of PHAF. I'm doing okay,
But I want a yacht too, goddammit.
Because that's what it's all about. Doesn't have a goddamn thing to do with the well-being of America. It has to do with the well-being of a teeny tiny itsy bitsy little handful of extremely rich, arguably damn near if not outright sociopathic executives. And then, of course, apparently the money is getting scared, because in separate pieces in both the Washington Post and Politico, there have run in the last 24 hours vicious hit pieces on Elizabeth Warren. The one by Ed Rendell in the Washington Post was particularly sickening. They headlined it, "I like Elizabeth Warren. Too bad she's a hypocrite." Again, by Ed Rendell, who doesn't give a skinny fuck about anybody who isn't Ed Rendell. Monique pointed that out. Same with guns. These people don't listen to us. That's why they're starting to go after Elizabeth Warren. They just pander talk a lot of words and don't do shit except for their lobby money. Why aren't they on the tracks with the coal miners in West Virginia? I'm talking all of the Democratic candidates. It's a little complicated, that miners on the tracks thing. The fact that the miners on the tracks all voted for Trump and are getting exactly what everybody told them Trump would bring them, that's not to say I don't have sympathy. But, well, you know, a Bernie and Elizabeth, maybe a couple of others might go down there. But it would still be a tough conversation. Yeah. Oh, let's see. Steve in New York says, "It's pretty simple. First, make it so anyone can actually get health care. Second, we work out the kinks. The bottom line is, we need to get the narrative off of having health insurance to having actual, no kidding, access to health care." Hell of a lot of truth in that. And Steve adds, by way of a P.S., "By the way, fuck Ed Rendell. And it's almost like Arnold in PA was reading his mind." Arnold said, "Ed is a good Republican. Ed is a good Republican. Rendell sold PA to the fracking industry. He is a terrible human being. Or perhaps we might say attempt at a human being." But there you have it. I think I've made a pretty compelling case for the fact that there's no reality in this pageant tonight. I mean, you might get an attempt at some earnest answers from some of the candidates, but it's in light of the fact that it was ABC that ponied up that panel of Chris Christie, Rahm Emanuel, and Rich Lowry. It doesn't speak well for tonight. It doesn't bode well for tonight having anything in the way of earnest, honest brokerage from the host of the event. But the checks will clear. And ABC Disney will laugh all the way to the bank because of all the gullible Americans who will think this has anything to do with anything. All the Americans who don't know that the entire purpose of this charade is to deliver them a message from Pekaf. And sell them whatever else Disney has sold ad space for. Not me. Not us. We know better than to sit down at that folding table and find the queen. I wonder, says Ron and Raleigh, did Frank Luntz come up with the one-size-fits-all meme? All these spokes creeps for outfits like Big Tobacco and Monsanto and others have no soul. They care only for one thing, the bottom line, and their own bank account. Bingo! But the Biden surrogates have gotten the long knives out for Elizabeth Warren. I think they sense that she has a chance of growing a coalition. And they see perhaps Bernie on the wane. I don't know. But they're also, you know, they communicate amongst one another. And so while the attacks are out for Elizabeth Warren and the attacks are out for anybody who supports everybody in America being able to go to the doctor when they're sick, I mean, wouldn't you just love to scream at a, and I mean really not be nice. Wouldn't you just love to have a health insurance CEO standing in front of you and just scream yourself hoarse at him, telling him what a horrible piece of shit human being he is? Treat him like he treats the rest of us. Treat him for 1 hour the way he treats the rest of us every goddamn day of his misbegotten, miserable, misanthropic life. Wouldn't that be delightful? Here's how we fight back, says Steve in New York. At least one size fits all fits better than no size fits any. Truth. Last couple of days, we've had some good Jerry Falwell stories. Jerry Jr. Is still trying to bullshit his way out of the revelation of his graft and corruption. Today, he was tweeting about how inspiring it was to hear Don Henley sing "There's a Hole in the World" for the first time, as an anthem to the losses from 9/11. He got eaten alive on Twitter for that one. I saw that and I thought, Jer, when you heard that, were you dancing? Did you dance to it, Jer? Did you and Becky dance to it? Hopefully you weren't drinking that night, too. Yeah, imagine. And he said, and I told Don Henley personally that that was a Christian song. And if there's an iota of truth in that, please, please, sweet fake baby Jesus, let Don Henley have looked at Jerry Falwell and said, Jer, go fuck yourself. Fast Eddie, note coming in from Clarence. I lived under the reign of Ed Rendell as DA, mayor, and governor. It was not at all pleasant. But never mind Jer. Franklin Graham, another son of a grifter raising the grift to exponential heights. Franklin Graham, and I guess it's an orchestrated campaign because, you know, last night we had the clip from E.W. Jackson attacking Pete Buttigieg, quite prissily, I might add. Well, Franklin Graham is following suit. It's sleazy and nasty. Graham's been trying to damn Pete Buttigieg to hell for his gayness. Franklin, for some reason or another, is reserving his ire for only Pete Buttigieg. For two reasons. Marriage equality and a woman's right to control the workings of her own body. Nasty little bastard, Franklin Graham. He said, Mayor Pete Buttigieg has been speaking openly about his support for abortion, which he says is a woman's right to choose. That's a crock. Well, if one constitutional right's a crock, then another constitutional right can be a crock, Frank. You know, like guns. No one has the right to choose murder, said Frank. And of course, a little wad of cells that looks more like a sea monkey than a human being cannot be the subject of a murder, because it ain't human. And it can't live on its own. Pastor Ryan Glesman, who is the brother of the man Mayor Pete is married to. That's a tortured little English construction there. There's some fake English for you. Said, I feel a sense of responsibility and stewardship of my faith to stand up and say something, to say, no, that's not true. Mayor Pete is trying to tell people that the homosexual lifestyle, about which Franklin Graham spends an inordinate amount of time thinking, is okay with God and that abortion is okay. His brother-in-law is right when he said, this is leading people astray and it's very, very dangerous. God defines right and wrong, not us. Who's God? Which God? Well, you know, Allah. No, not Allah. Good old Jehovah there. Yeah, the Bronze Age, great big bearded juvenile delinquent in the sky who wants people to be stoned to death for eating shrimp. And it's all tax-free. Hallelujah. Yeah. Hey, thank you, Louie. Louie just jumped in. We're about the halfway point of the program. Thank you so very much. We just went from 395 down to 370. Thanks a whole bunch, Louie. Thank you very, very much. With any luck, we'll get this bill paid tomorrow. It would be lovely if we could. Thank you, Louie. Big thanks. That's how we keep this going. Steve writes, actually, Franklin Graham is peeved at Mayor Pete for two other reasons. One, he wants to get with Mayor Pete. Two, Mayor Pete's standards are too high for Franklin Fruitylicious Graham. Well, that one may stick. Franklin Fruitylicious Graham. Wonder if Frank has ever called Jer to see if he could borrow the pool boy.
Got some pool boy I could borrow, Jerry? I'm fresh out. Emphasis on fresh.
Yeah, there's that. Regarding the statement, no one has the right to choose murder. Asa says, have you asked Adam Lanza's opinion about that, Mr. Graham? Or for that matter, Mother Lanza.
Mother!
Mm-hmm. So here we are, halfway through the program. I feel like in the name of kind of doing my job, I should probably watch the pageant starting at 8. But I'm not sure. I mean, I can't watch it and do this at the same time. So I don't know. We'll play it by ear. Let's check in over at Skype and see what's going on. I trust Scott got home safely from the bacchanal that he was participating in the other night.
Yeah. I even had my little doggy bag, or in my case, my kitty bag. And later that evening, I heated up the Aussie green beans and the Aussie fries and the Aussie 9 ounce.
Ah, you say Aussie.
Aussie. Well, I'm only on about a cup and a half of coffee here, so it's no wonder I can say much of anything at this point. But
it's corporate for not a damn thing Australian about it.
Yeah. But little Chirps enjoyed her little bit of fillet, and I enjoyed my leftovers. I enjoyed the company of Rick, Billable Rick, and Joe from Cleveland. And special guest, late drop-in arrival, Tamara, who dropped in at the wall. And the conversation, of course, with you and the Horn family there. I mean, who could ask for much more, you know? But did you ever see the movie, 1980 movie, with Kurt Russell and what's his name, Warden? The classic actor from
Jack
the early
Warden.
TV. Jack Warden, who plays the dual role of the competing brothers with used car lots. The name of the film is Used Cars. You ever see that film, Bob?
I don't recall having seen that.
Oh, well, you need to dig that one out. There's a scene, a pivotal scene in there where Rudy and his crew, who is played is Kurt Russell's role, rig up a satellite dish, and there's a presidential address by then President Jimmy Carter talking about the oil crisis and the gas prices and stuff, and they cut into the national feed coming from the White House to do their own used car commercial. I wouldn't be too put out if some enterprising young tech genius did that to the ABC dish tonight at pivotal moments, just cut right into that fucker and tell the truth for 60 seconds or however long it takes, you know, for ABC to regain control. I'm probably advocating, you know, telecommunications piracy and, you know, there's a stiff fine, but what the hell? it would liven up the pageant, if nothing else, wouldn't it?
You would have to think.
Yeah, so... Or only do it during the commercials that you were talking about, the crazy right wing, no healthcare for nobody commercials, which are so asinine anyway. You know, it's not a one size fits all, and that does have Frank Luntz written all over it, to my ear. It's not one size fits all. It's basically a baseline healthcare package for every American. Okay.
Well, I mean, on its face, it's stupid. But the other part of it is if there's a reason things are one size fits all. Because one size fits the vast majority of wearers to one degree or another. And
yeah, but we don't even have that in reality.
Right, we don't have that. I mean, what about what about Medicare? I mean, that was conceived as sort of one size fits all. All the people who turn 65 get to have this one thing called Medicare.
Well, and I've had it for years. I mean, being disabled. If you're disabled or a minor dependent of a deceased Social Security payee, or one who has paid into the system, or a surviving spouse in some cases.
You mean like Paul Ryan?
Oh yeah, exactly. There's a name from the past. But what I'm saying is, most people even with Obamacare, there were still some 20 or 30 million people who were completely left out in the cold.
Yeah.
In terms of health insurance. And there's an easy test for this. If left, right, and center people want to do a reality check on the veracity of these commercials they'll be seeing tonight, these propaganda pieces, go look in the mirror, okay? Every man, woman, and child, go look in a mirror and smile. Give yourself a big, broad smile or a big, hearty laugh, and give me a sense of the nature of the condition of your mouth. Are all of your teeth bright and shiny? Do you have all of your teeth? And if you don't have all of your teeth, do you have replacements in the form of bridge work or full dentures? And if the answer to that question is no, then this so-called one-size-fits-all through Medicare isn't working, because it doesn't include... Well, some people won't be able to see their reflection in the mirror because they don't have access to eye exams and prescription eyewear, okay? So these fuckers, and then... Rahm Emanuel is being deliberately obtuse,
he's just being Rahm, which is to say evil.
Well, and Chris Christie is being deliberately stupid.
I don't think he has to work much, but that's okay.
Well, both of these men have enough intellect to know that what they're peddling is just horseshit. They know that things.
Yeah, but it's the horse shit. But it's the horse shit that keeps the checks clear, in Scott.
I know.
You know, we're back in Upton Sinclair territory. It is difficult to get a man to understand something when his paycheck requires him to not understand it.
Exactly. And the problem is, when you have people, the vast majority, I think, of people in this country, who understand the reality of the situation and are putting forward remedies to address the situation, when they're being painted as the radical fucking left, there's something definitely wrong with the nature of the conversation in this country. And that's where the problem is, Bob. That's
well, there's nobody that's going to see that ad and have their mind changed. Okay.
Well, yeah, it's designed to confirm the mindset of the so-called true believers already.
And anybody whose mind is changed by that ad probably doesn't have any business wearing shoes that require laces.
Well, they do have those Velcro sneakers. I'm sure you've seen those. No, the whole point of that, or even political ads, is to generate a fucking mailing list. That's one of the reasons. If they can get you to call the number and give your email, then they can bombard you with all manner of phone calls or begging emails. So you get the begging bowl out and try to enlist you to send them money, which they don't need, as is evidenced by the fact that they can afford a fucking huge package of commercials during the 3 hours worth of tonight's pageant. What do they need your money for if they can afford to buy a package like that, you know? Plus online. Plus, who knows?
Well, by virtue of the fact that they will write it off, and by virtue of the fact that is probably tax exempt anyway.
Yeah.
So the health insurance companies and the big pharma companies that give money to prop PCAF up, they write that off, and then PCAF doesn't pay taxes either. And so when you get right down to it, guess who's paying for these ads?
Well, yeah.
Suckers!
Yeah, there you go. And tonight, I mean, as to what we'll be seeing with the 10 or 11 candidates on the stage for 3 hours, three fucking hours, Bob. Jesus. Are we going to be able to stand this? I'm going to watch it. I've got the DVR all set. And I'll dutifully watch it, if only to make derisive comments at the moderators, the questioners, the folks out in the audience, and even a few of the candidates. I don't give a fuck. I mean, my mind is pretty much made up as far as who I would vote for, at least in the first go round. I'm telling you, it doesn't speak well of the state of things. We would like to think that we've come so far along and that the people who may or may not be on the ballot are worthy of our vote and will bring something to the party that is going to be of use and of benefit and actually will cause change to occur, you know. But then again, you look a little more close and it's like, oh God, same old, you know.
Bullshit. Well, and the thing is, unless PCAF is a 501c4, that changes the tax implications in ways that probably Billable Rick or Steve could explain better than I. But if they are a 501c3 tax-exempt organization, and I think they are because they use that word education in their propaganda blast, then, you know, they're forbidden from campaigning against candidates by name. But the simple fact that they're running this filth in this pageant says that they are campaigning against anyone who wants Medicare for All, which in a far more just world would mean that these fuckers would have their tax-exempt status yanked right out from under them and get a tax bill for the lot of it.
Yeah. And aren't there network prohibitions for what they call, what the networks refer to, advocacy ads? Would this fall under that heading, an advocacy ad?
Yeah, but the check cleared. The standards and practices and ethics folks at a place like ABC, their morals are more slippery than the lube room in a brothel.
Yeah, I've been to places that are wallpapered and carpeted.
Yeah, don't. I love a lot of your stories. That's one of them I'm probably not going to love.
All right, well, I won't go there. Yeah, well, actually, you only have to go there once to know that you don't want to go back. But anyway.
You're incorrigible.
You invoked the name of Reagan, or referenced the name of Reagan. I'll give you a hint in terms of the job that the networks used to do versus the job that the networks do now. Back in the days when you had William Paley, founder of CBS, David Sarnoff, founder of National Broadcasting Company, and William Goldenson, pretty much the founder of the American Broadcasting Company, ABC, CBS, NBC, when you had that group of people heading things up, combined with national laws that kept a fairly close eye on the behavior and the practices of networks, their owned and operated stations, and their affiliates, you had a higher caliber of news and information dissemination and public service type broadcasting. Well, those days, isn't it interesting how those practices and those days seem to go away in 1981. Well, a little bit in the 70s, they were beginning to gnaw around the edges of the pizza, but it really started in dead earnest. Not to bring Hemingway into it, in 81 with the coronation of Ronald Reagan.
Well, there's another seminal moment in this too.
Yeah.
And that is the day that ABC, our villain for this evening, the day that ABC decided it would be a great idea to have Rune Arledge, who turned sporting spectacle and some poor bastard crashing on a ski jump, into big dollars for ABC.
The thrill of victory, the agony of defeat.
They put Rune Arledge in charge of the news division because they wanted the news to make money.
Now, was that before or after ABC merged with Capital Cities newspapers and TV radio? It was right around that time. Or maybe Rune got brought in from sports to run the news division, and that propped up ABC's news ratings and made it a better attractive target for Cap Cities. I forget my order of worship. Somebody probably knows. And see, that's the other thing. There was a time when the three major networks were owned and operated by astute business people who had a sense of morality and responsibility. But then GE, military contractor General Electric, bought NBC. So there was that. You had Lawrence, one of the Tisch people, owning CBS, and that poor network has changed hands more than a $10 hooker, okay? And then with ABC, you had Cap Cities, and then another company kind of got in on it, and now I don't know who owns them, Disney, I guess. And they've lost their
vision. Well, Arledge came on in 1977.
Okay, that was pre-Reagan.
And he, part of what he did was using a bunch of splashy graphics and basically turned ABC's evening news, which was floundering at the time, into he remodeled it on the pattern of Wide World of Sports. And that was how World News Tonight was born. And so they had Frank Reynolds in Washington, Max Robinson in Chicago, and Peter Jennings in London. And that was a big deal at the time.
Oh, yeah. And they immediately began to eat into the ratings dominance of NBC and CBS.
Yeah.
It was slow at first, but, man, it really picked up.
And he created This Week with David Brinkley, getting him over from NBC.
Well, that's the weird thing is at that point, NBC, if you can believe it, couldn't find a place for one of the sharpest minds in TV journalism, David Brinkley. And finally, in exasperation, Brinkley jumped over to ABC, was given a pretty attractive offer, and said, well, yeah, if they're going to find a place for me and a legitimate job to do, then sure, why not? He had only been with NBC since 1948,
Yeah. I just got a note from Cynthia. Hi, Bob. I love my Medicare. Every American should have it. And think about it. What could be the lowest risk for the country than to have one giant pool of people, the whole country, to cover the cost? Hell, how many people could really afford one of those much smaller high-risk pools, especially if it covered anything that wasn't denying coverage left and right? And by the way, under Medicare, I'm still going to the same doctors that I've gone to for decades. If I were going to improve Medicare, I'd get rid of Medicare Advantage and Part D for drug coverage, and I'd add the drug coverage, dental and vision, to Medicare. Will that sort of thing ever happen? I don't know. But I'm discouraged given how this country is so full of knuckle-dragging, brainwashed idiots, don't hold back, Cynthia, who are too stupid to vote for their own interests. Anyway, love the show, Bob, and if it were up to me, you'd have Medicare now. Thank you, Cynthia. Thank you so very much. And I agree with every word Cynthia wrote. There's no excuse. And that's the bottom line. There is no excuse for a country that put a human being on the moon when other countries are busy corkscrewing robots into it.
Yeah.
There's no reason that a country that could put multiple human beings on the moon can't figure out a way to let every American go to the doctor when they're sick, get necessary surgeries. Yeah, because there's this sick propaganda from PCAP, and whatever her name was. There's a sick little confession there. And it would be fun if somebody would break it off in them and saying, so what you're saying is that we, the people of the United States, are too goddamn stupid to be able to figure out a way to make it possible for every American to go to the doctor when they're sick. And then just look at them and say, why do you hate America? Why are you calling America stupid? Because this, I swear, I promise, this is not something as complicated as string theory or quantum mechanics or Einstein's unified field theory. This is just about getting people to the doctor when they're sick, making sure the doctors are fairly paid. And yeah, because I'm the kind of person I am, I would like to put all the insurance CEOs and CFOs and COOs on an island. And give them lots of things to play with and watch it devolve into Lord of the Flies. Just watch capitalism run amok. And just make, as long as we made sure that none of the dirty little bastards could ever get off that island. Hell, we could let CBS run it as an installment of Survivor. Because, you know, what is that? Outlast, outrun, out connive, out cheat, out double deal. The motto for Survivor. Well, there's nobody better suited than an insurance agent. Not an insurance agent. I'm sorry. I misspoke. Than an insurance executive.
Yeah. Well, here's a sobering thought. That program you mentioned, Survivor, apparently is in its starting its 25th season,
which just now, blows my mind because I have never watched a single episode.
Well, you want to hear an irony, Bob?
Lay it on me.
Okay. I am not one for reality TV. You know, these so-called reality shows where there's a lot of competition and bullshit and it's all phonied up. There was only one so-called reality show that I ever watched with regularity, and that was The Apprentice. Because in its early days, when it was civilians and not, celebrities in competition with one another, it was a somewhat entertaining program, if you can believe it. But even that was ruined. And I think, isn't the guy from Britain or Australia or something, whose name I can't
Mark
remember?
Mark Burnett.
Mark Burnett was the executive producer of
The Apprentice.
He's
the one with all the ginger tapes.
But isn't he, didn't, doesn't he have a relationship with Survivor or one of the other?
Yeah.
Okay.
And he's bosom buddies with Nitwit Nero.
Yeah.
Oh, this is and fun. This is here's a fun little piece of trivia for you, courtesy of Arnold.
Okay.
When ABC was taken over by Disney, the very first email to the news department said, "Welcome cast members."
No. Jesus.
Arnold's never led me wrong before.
Now, that if that's not a telling thing, I don't know what is. I mean, that should speak volumes as to the well. You know, I have never been a fan of anything produced by Walt Disney. I mean, maybe in my kidhood, I watched reruns of the Mickey Mouse Club and Spin and Marty and Hardy Boys and all that. And then maybe I watched Walt when he was still around and The Wonderful World of Disney, you know, in living color on NBC Sunday nights, you know. But in terms of Mickey Mouse or Goofy or Pluto or those cartoons, I hated them. I detested them.
Oh, I know. I never liked the Disney stuff. I was in order of preference, Warner Brothers, and then MGM.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
Over, you know, what's his name? Tex Avery gets his start in the shop at Warner Brothers, and then goes over to MGM and creates the genius of Tom and Jerry, and things like Swing Shift Cinderella.
Yeah, and also Hanna and Barbera, who later gave us the Jetsons and the Flintstones and all
yeah.
that, were pivotal to the creation of Tom and Jerry
yeah.
over at MGM. But the point of it is, it's like, if this is what, you know, The Apprentice or, I keep wanting to call it Outback, The Survivor or those types of shows, if this is what passes for entertainment, we already know that news has gone straight to shit on the network. Oh, God, Bob, it's starting. Do you have your feed up?
No, I don't. I'm going to knock off and you know, probably tweet something. Yeah.
Oh, God. There's yeah. Joe. There's Elizabeth.
By the way, Randy in PA says, I watched Survivor exactly once. What a disgusting show. You know, on that show, someone fell into a campfire, and I don't want to support that.
Yeah. Well, that's entertainment, boys and girls, in today's America. God, what a motley crew on the panel.
Yep, here we go. All right, well, Scott, I'm gonna knock off because I feel like I really do need to actually watch this madness. I'm probably gonna go in the studio and piss off Agnes by putting it on, and but the thing is, we'll both scream at the telescreen together.
Yeah, I'm going to wake Chirps up, let her sit here and bat at the screen. All right, Bob, take care, man, and try to stay sane for the next 3 hours. It won't be easy, but do your best.
Ain't going to be easy. That's the whole thing. All right, Scott, take it easy, man.
All right, see ya.
Later. I very seldom let this program get interrupted by stuff on the for-profit media, but after having tried to explain what a con it is, I feel an obligation to watch the con unfold so that I can at least have that little bit of self-satisfied validation in it. So back tomorrow, for Friday on the front porch, I hope. If I ain't here, Bill didn't get paid. But, like I said, I'll do everything in my power. Fundraising goal for tomorrow, $570. And, you know, we'll sweat it, and hopefully we'll make it. Thanks to all of you who do keep the program going day in and day out. Thank you to our subscribers and those of you who kick in on an ad hoc basis. Thank you. Thank you to Louie for jumping in this evening. Thank you very kindly. Otherwise, it would have been $25 worse. Thank you, Louie. Thank you very, very much. Thanks to all of you who share your precious finite time engaged in this long-running nightly conversation. Thank you to our all-volunteer staff. Thanks to Sparky and Steve in the chat room. Thank you. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa, HeadOn.live. Thank you, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thank you, John Fox in Australia. Thank you to the hardest-working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. This year marks 20 years that Coal River has been at the forefront of the struggle for human rights and environmental justice in Appalachia. drop on by sometime. See what they're up to. CRMW.net. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Later, y'all. It might be best, by the way, to, and this is for folks listening in real time, if you're going to watch the pageant like me, you know, I'm going to do the Oedipus thing. I'm going to have Agnes lash me to the mast, and she can put beeswax in her ears, but I'm going to hear it, and I'm going to do my screaming. But especially if you're in an apartment complex or something like that, you might want to watch it with your official horn, hockey puck, and duct tape.
Quit telling us how to watch the goddamn pageant, Bob.
A couple of notes on the way out the door. What's that? Shorty says, everybody play Gil Scott Heron and Whitey on the Moon. You can find it over at YouTube. Ron and Raleigh says, yeah, I watched The Great Race a couple of times. I may have watched like 15 minutes of that once or something. So that's it. If you follow me on Twitter, I'll probably be tweeting at Bob Kincaid. All right, y'all. Later.